Pickaxe.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triforce Podcast with me and Sips Imperium Flax.
Hey.
Coming at you.
What's up?
Live and unchained on 26th of April 2018.
Hey, Lewis.
What?
I lost my dildo. Where could it be?
Are you tired of losing your dildo every 5 seconds? Well, try the new JML Dildo Tracker. That's right. Never lose your dildo again. Proudly sponsored by Dildos.
Hey, I always lose my dildo, P-Flax. What about you?
Let me tell you something, Lewis. I stopped losing my dildo some time ago, thanks to, what was it called again?
Dildo Tracker.
The XLMS.co.uk
/ Triforce Podcast.
So never lose your dildo again. I lost my dildo deep inside my number one bae's bunghole.
Number one bae.
Couldn't find it for days. God damn, if it wasn't for Dildo Tracker .html, I would have gone to work with this thing in my ass. I didn't realize it was up there. Thanks, Dildo Tracker.
Do you find yourself using street language like number one bae? I consider that to be the young people's language.
It's not street language. That's the new nerd language, isn't it? It's like internet, dumb internet language. Like, I don't think people use that in real life.
I think it's cool.
Yeah.
All the Twitch memes and the emotes stuff. Yeah. Do you not think all the cappers and stuff?
I added some new emotes to my channel recently because people were complaining. You know, you have to. I've subscribed to BTTV, which is Better Twitch TV for anyone that doesn't know. And it's like a website that adds a load of extra stuff into your Twitch channel. So you can subscribe to BTTV for like $3 a month or something, and you then get access to a bunch of emotes, like all the popular ones, like monk ass and Pepe hands and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
the people, for some reason, they fucking love to use them, and some of them are pretty funny, right? So I think it's interesting that the acronyms or the names of those emotes have now become things that people just say.
Yeah.
Like, we were talking the other
Kappa.
Day about something, and someone
Kappa,
said
yeah.
said, oh man, Monka S, and a Monka S is like Pepe looking really nervous, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I thought, can we not just say I was really nervous? Like, people have languages being compressed into what single word or even syllable
can I
use that expresses an entire emotion?
Ellie Jiggle.
Ellie Giggle. Yeah, exactly. Gosh. Or so bade was something my friend said for a long time. So bade.
I guess it's because you can't see the faces of the people that you're talking to, right? And so, like, sometimes when, you know, I'm sat in a live stream room or something playing a game or next to someone, you know, they'll sometimes look at me sideways and, you know, and it'll be like a visual message, right? And I think that you can do that with emotes, that you can express this kind of very specific, like, you know, like nervous face without having to say, I feel nervous.
Right.
You know, no, yeah, well, sense. That's the thing. There's no, you can't convey emotion or anything over a chat room, right? Like, that's always
How
been the problem.
How did we manage on the phone then? Phones have been around for 100-something years.
You can hear the tone of voice and stuff.
Yeah,
it's different.
But they're always a little bit formal as well. Like, even this conversation, because you kind of have to, it's sometimes language is always limited, okay? Like, the context and complexity, it's massive. You know, it's like in Italy, you know, you can't learn Italian without learning all the hand movements, for example, you know, because Italians gesture and gesticulate and do this wild stuff. And it's very important when you actually see Italian speaking that you also see their hands because it's part of the language. And that's because the more complexity, the better, really, because it helps you to convey exactly how you're feeling. You know, if you're seeing someone talk and they've got this expression on their face, then you think, okay, I can understand way more about what's happening here, I guess.
Yeah. You don't even really need to talk sometimes. Sometimes you can just do gestures and facial expressions and that's enough, right?
Mm. We could just talk entirely in emojis.
That's right. We can just do real life emojis to each other.
Serious face, smiley face.
You know, the knowing look. I like the knowing look. You know that the knowing look is such a is such a like an artful facial expression, isn't it? Because it just clicks. You know, like something happens, you look at somebody and they give you that look. And it says 1,000 words.
So I think that's my problem, because I don't know anything, so I can't do the knowing look. I try to do the knowing look, and they're just like, he doesn't know.
Oh, I can picture you doing the knowing look.
The unknowing look I've got. The confused look, I can do confused
There's
real
the
well.
Unknowing, yeah. Yeah, the unknowing look is a good one, too.
You know,
yeah.
Like Harry, you know, a beautiful Barry boy, he says roffle sometimes instead of laughing. He'll just say roffle. I think this is a man who spent too much time in Twitch chat. Roffle, he'll say, and I'm like... Was it funny? Because you're not laughing. You're saying roffle.
Yeah.
But that's more of a kind of like cynical kind of.
Yeah.
It's become a kind of cynical way of saying like, you know,
exactly.
Or something like this, you know.
You
it's
know
just
what?
A different...
Actually, the other day, my 6-year-old was actually roffling. Like, it was like, adults don't do that.
No.
But if kids find something so funny, they'll fall on the floor. She was rolling on the floor and laughing. And I thought, this is the actual roffle.
This is where
and I'm thinking,
it came from.
People type roffle far too casually, because I saw it in real life. And let me tell you something. Most times when people type roffle, I don't actually believe that they're anything like as close to that kind of hysterical laughter that she was in.
Well,
actually,
I'm going to have to...
I mean, LOL was the original, right? That was the first. That was the first sort of like internet shorthand.
Yeah, back when the internet was
honest. I remember everything.
Yeah, and when people typed "lol," I think they actually were lolling.
Yeah.
I always type "ha ha ha." I try to
avoid
using "lol."
Me too. I
LOL.
Still do. Yeah. I still. It's a habit thing. Like it's not. It's not because I think I'm too cool to use "lol." I used the internet before LOL existed, and
exactly.
I used ha 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 instead, sort of thing.
Yeah, I think I've actually laughed out loud in real life, I'm never going to write LOL. I'm going to write, you know.
But
I
thought that LOL was reserved to laugh out loud, and there couldn't be any other meanings. But people use it to say lots of love as well. Like my mom does. And I think older people on Facebook use it.
Mm.
And it's confusing sometimes because. There'll be a post on Facebook that says somebody's died, and then you'll see like a whole bunch of replies saying LOL, and you think, oh my God, these people are brutal. This person's died. But actually, they're saying oh, you know, we're sending lots of love to you or whatever. And it's weird. I don't think that they're allowed to do that. I don't think they should be allowed to do that. It's LOL, laugh out loud. It's always been that. Don't try to change it.
It's like, Lewis,
find your own new thing.
I'm terribly sorry to say your nan's gone into hospital again. LOL.
LOL.
From mum. I mean, it's like a classic.
It's confusing. I don't know.
Mm.
I'm sure that there's words in the English language that both mean something terrible and delightful at the same time.
I
can't think of any of them off the top of my head, but it's very confusing. And I think that there should be some policing done.
Pussy.
We should have a
can be good and bad, right? Like you can call someone a pussy, or you can say, "Man,
pussy's,
this pussy's so good."
Pussy's got a lot more positives than negatives, though. Like
I don't know,
pussy cat.
You call someone a pussy? I mean, if you ever like old people tend to refer to like, do you remember Mrs. Slocum, whatever her name was, Mrs. Slocum from Are You Being Served? Oh, my pussy is ever so hungry. You know, and people were like, "Whoa!" and laughing. Because she's literally just saying, my vagina really needs some cock right now. But she got away with
it by
just saying, oh, my pussy's... He came in the other day, my pussy was soaking wet. And the audience would laugh. And I'm thinking, I feel like nowadays people would say that it's just smutty. But back then it was meant to be like innuendo.
Uh-huh.
But that's not really innuendo.
No.
She's literally just saying, my pussy is wet. Like, it's kind of ridiculous. It was lazy.
But I think that it's a kind of, that is a bit of a joke of that she's out of touch kind of thing with modern lingo. And I think that those jokes are always going to work. I think what you end up finding is when you get a community of people who speak the same language, if you like, you're going to understand what Munker S is and stuff.
Right.
And you're going to understand. And it kind of what it does is it acts in a way to stop other people from entering that group necessarily. You know, they're going to have to... they're kind of not one of your clan, if you like. Do you know what I mean? It's not exactly hiding it from the police or anything, but it certainly kind of helps to form like this kind of companionship amongst people, because I think everyone does watch a lot of Twitch. They type a lot of emotes and you know, they know what these are. It's not a bad thing. Do you think like GIFs are like another thing that
GIFs? You mean? Yeah.
Let's not do this again.
Giraffes.
Pussy is an interesting one. Pussy is.
Let's stick to that then.
Awkward one to say in certain contexts, right?
Yeah.
You wouldn't say to your wife, "Oh, I can't wait to get up in your pussy tonight," like, because it's awkward.
I think you can.
You never say that.
I think you can. I think it's a funny thing to say.
And it's awkward to hear it,
but
too.
But when you say it in that really flat way, it's so funny. Hey, honey.
It's awkward to hear it, too, when people are talking about, "Oh, you should have seen her pussy." And that's awkward, too, if people say that. And then in porn as well, when women are like, "Oh, my pussy," and stuff. It's, again, awkward, super awkward. But I have no problem saying the word pussy to describe somebody as a pussy. Like, say, "Don't be such a pussy." Like, it doesn't bug me at all. I don't feel bad about using that word at all in that context. But right. I feel tremendously awkward using it in pretty much any other context.
I think most of the other
words...
The
only time I'll use it is ironically, sort of thing.
But most of the words that we have for describing the vagina, right? Yeah. The vajayjay.
The vajazzle.
There are very few that are sexy. Like, pussy is probably the closest we've got. And I know some women that hate that word.
Yeah.
But you're not going to... I mean, if you said... it depends on the kind of sex you want to have. If you said to me, "I want you to destroy my cunt right now," right? If that was the line...
Yeah, I wouldn't want that one either, but...
I mean, some women would go for that. It's not hot. It sounds gross.
I'm not prudish or anything, but I just don't want somebody... I wouldn't say, "Want to touch my cock?" Like, I wouldn't describe my dick as a cock either. Like, it just sounds...
How would you describe it?
Just call it my dick. Want to play with my dick and my balls?
Would you like to touch this object
pants? Would you like to engage in some sexual activity with my penis?
We need a good phrase that you could say, like, you can just say, "Do you want to have sex?" Like, that works for me.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, again, I genuinely think it is, again, like you said, it's different with everyone. And I think it's how comfortable you are. And I think if you could, like... a lot of it is fun anyway, right? And if you're hanging out with people who know you, and you could pretty much say anything in a joking way to someone who knows you, and they're not gonna think you're serious, you know. But sometimes maybe you got to get serious, and you got to pick your right words, you know.
Yeah, because let's say you're at a bar with a girl, and you want to say, I mean, you could just say, "Hey, would you like to come back to my place and have sex?" You could say that, and I guess if she wanted to, as long as you didn't say something too stupid. Like, "I want to get all torn up that ass," you know, something like that. And she'd be like, "That doesn't really seem appropriate coming from you and in this setting, since we're, you know, at a dinner party." I mean, you'd need to find
a cocktail bar.
Yeah, you'd need to find the right approach.
"You want to come back to my house so I can break your ass like dishes?
Stick my ram right up that tush?
You want to load this cannon?"
You need to find the right way. How many sexual encounters have been turned down at the very last second, just as that final hurdle of saying, "Hey, do you want to come and have sex?" "Yeah, cool, let's go." How many have fallen down based on the choice of phrasing?
Yeah, I think those encounters are falling down all along that road, though.
There's
got to
be,
you know,
there's got to be these.
You know, when you talk to someone and they say something, and it's like, "Oh, that's a bit of a fucking red flag. What the fuck?"
Right, but that's the thing. Sometimes those red flags don't come up until really late. Like, sometimes you'll know someone really well, you'll know them for years, and suddenly they have an opinion that you think, "Holy shit, I didn't know this person at all. Like, I really thought I knew this person, and now it turns out that I don't, because of one thing they've said." Like if I'd had a friend for years and they suddenly say...
I think
say,
that's usually when they've got like a polarized position to you, right?
Right, right.
It's
there,
like the people you like tend to be people who agree with all of the things that you think.
Or
as well,
enough
right?
of them. That you're not completely... Yeah.
I seldom agree with you guys.
But I mean, imagine if someone just suddenly said they're a flat earther and they always have been. You'd be like, "What? I didn't. What are you talking about?" And they'd be like, no, it's a conspiracy, dude. The Jews run everything. You'd be like, "Oh my God, like, this never came up. And now it turns out that this person's crazy."
The Jews run everything? Holy shit.
Jesus Christ. That came out of nowhere.
Well, I mean, I suspected. But,
Like, it's, but seriously, like, imagine if you were at a bar and, you know, you're getting on great with someone and they ask you to have sex, but the way they ask you is so fucking clunky that you're like, oh man, this was going somewhere.
I think there's definitely a point that you could cross where you're probably in the mood to hear anything, though. With just like the promise of sex and the excitement around like a sexual encounter and stuff. You know, if they turned around and they're like, yes, let's go do it, but sorry in advance if my pussy stinks a bit. You'd be like, oh, whatever. Let's just go. Let's fucking go. Let's get this done with. But yeah, I guess it's
I think women are more on edge than men, though. I think men are like, fucking, we'll do whatever. But I think women are more like, kind of, they're very much like, I think they're always thinking that you're going to be an axe murderer, or they're going to get, like, you know,
maybe,
like, tied up in a dungeon or something. You know, I think they're always a bit. And so they're always looking for, like, any red flags. So,
it's weird. It's kind of weird.
It's probably a good thing. Holy shit.
The difference between men and women in what men find attractive and what women find attractive, those differences are always really interesting, too. Like, we'll be walking down the road and, you know, you know, sometimes you're walking down the road with your wife or your girlfriend and you'll see a woman walking towards you. And she's dressed very provocatively, right? But she doesn't always look that great. It's just very provocative clothes, you know, right. Or lack of clothes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, but sometimes my wife will say like, oh, did you see her? And I'll be like, yeah, yeah. And she'll be like, do you find that attractive? And I think like, but I don't know if I do. Like, I think my dick thinks, yeah, that looks okay. but... In terms of actual attractiveness, and if I was attracted to this person and wanted to enter into a long relationship with them or whatever, I don't know. You know, like sometimes you see somebody and you think, oh shit, I would love to spend the rest of my life with that person. You know, they just look like nice and wholesome and stuff.
But
and
I mean, here's the thing. We're saying that as married dudes.
Yeah.
And you and me have been married or with someone for a long time, right?
Exactly.
So when I see a woman, I'm thinking, how? I wonder what she'd be like to be married to. But I mean, if you're like 22 and single, you see, or you know, maybe you're older than that. And
you're
single.
Thinking, I wonder what that would be like to be married
to. I do sometimes wonder that when I see other women. I wonder what she'd be like as a wife.
What fabric softener she uses.
Fabric softener. I wonder what kind of dishes. Is she good at doing the dishes and cooking?
I wonder if she makes a very mean macaroni and cheese.
I wonder if she can mend a torn bit of clothing, like a knee.
I've been looking for a good wife. I hope she has a good family.
Do you guys know what I mean, though? You know, it's like
I hope she has a strong back with which to till the land.
I think men are definitely attracted to things in women that are different to the reasons. We try to imagine that women are attracted to the same types of things, right? Like men not wearing many clothes. But are women really attracted to that, or is it more of an emotional thing? I feel like it's a more emotional thing.
Do you know what I think the thing is?
Aren't chiseled and
right, but that's the thing.
Most women,
to men. I'm obviously just for the sake of clarity, we're all talking about heterosexual stuff because that's what we know.
Please
right?
also understand that we have all got no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah, this is just a laugh. We're just having a conversation.
Yes.
You don't need to fill Reddit up with some comments and some fucking bullshit. So just shut up and listen. All right. So
okay.
And you might learn something, you youngins.
I just went there. Yeah. Fucking listen up. Jesus. Got combined like 90 years of experience here.
Right.
So fucking we are one grumpy old man.
You know what? If you want to post on Reddit at length about it, just do you do you. Just go for it.
Yeah.
Flax will probably
My downvote button is ready. Well, I tell you that. I'm just going to hammer that down button. I'm going to get all my many Russian bot accounts to downvote you as well. So good luck, pal.
Fuck you.
Great.
Right.
So here we go. So you were saying, like, do women want to see men not wear much? I think the thing is, most men, generally speaking, when I'm walking around, I'm looking at other dudes, you know, and I see them, and I'm like, most of them are not in great shape. You know, they're like me.
No,
they're,
they've all got dad bods.
Yeah, they're
they
all doughy.
They all
they're
look destroyed
bald,
by
you
life,
know?
Don't
exactly.
they? Like, a lot of them are massively henpecked as well.
Right.
That drives me. I hate that. I hate seeing a henpecked guy. Jeez.
What's a henpecked guy? How do you,
you know,
spot
the guy,
one?
You're the guy that's just shambling along behind his partner, holding all the bags and like doesn't say anything, his head is down, he just looks like some sort of weird slave or something. I hate that.
Let's come back to
Grow
that complex question. So you're walking along the street with your wife and she asks, she sees the top woman coming along and she says to you, you know, do you find that woman attractive? And that question, it, you know, she might as well put an emote on the end of it, because we need to know what she actually fucking means. Without
Pepe
seeing
hands.
Her face, no, without no. seeing, like, do you know, because that question
it's
could
a fair
be,
question. I've asked the same thing. You see a guy that looks a bit like Brad Pitt.
Oh,
and
yeah,
you,
I do
you
that all the time. Some
and, and you say, like, do you find that guy attractive? Like, because I feel like I find him attractive a bit, and I'm just curious exactly. if other people agree, sort of thing. I'm not. It's not like, a jealousy it's thing. It's
yeah,
not.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand what is yeah. an attractive dude, because I find yeah, it hard. Like, but, I'll see a dude that I think I'm sure Mrs. F would like John Cena. Looks like an attractive guy to me. He's a big guy, nice guy, great body, and all the rest of it. I'm sure Mrs. F would like John Cena. Oh no, he's much too big, much too muscly. And I'm thinking, I don't think dudes are that picky. Genuinely, I don't
yeah,
think
no,
men
like,
are as picky.
I think guys just want
to
see anyone in a bikini or something.
Yeah, see, I don't
possibly
care what she looks
stripping.
Like. As long as she's got a reasonable face, she can wear what the fuck she likes. I don't care
about
the body.
And also for men, I feel like it's not even it's partly that, but I think more so as well. It's the it's women appearing to be very available or like being like really up for it, sort of thing.
But
as well.
Not a, but unavailable, especially in London.
Yeah, sometimes.
Like you,
I guess,
if you go
yeah.
up north in the UK, I'm sure it's true of every country's got a region. I'm gonna say the women are looser, but they'll chat to you. They don't have a stick up their ass. In London and a few other places, if you even talk to a woman, she's like, get the fuck out of my face. If you go, I mean, we went out to Manchester, right? A whole bunch of us. And the girls, they just started chatting to us at the bar. They're like, oh, hey, where are you lads from? You're up from Bournemouth, blah, blah, blah. They chat. And there was no assumption that we were hitting on them. We were just having a chat with them. But in London and places like that, if you talk to a woman you don't know in a bar, she'll assume you're hitting on her, or she right. won't want to talk to you. My single mates have found it much, much harder to get girlfriends in London than in other parts of the country, like
easier
when you
parts
go up north.
Of the country.
I didn't want to put it that way.
Looser parts of the country. Yeah, but I know.
Where
you
the pussy flows free, like the land of milk and honey.
Nice.
But yeah,
nice.
There's an attitude thing. I think there is an
go
attitude
back
thing.
To that question though, the henpecked guy, yeah. right? His wife is asking in that question. You know, do you find her attractive? With the underlying
a
message
threat.
Of. Like you find Sandra at work attractive. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
No that's sex poor, for you for a month.
Exactly, for looking at this woman. Right. You know, there is this stereotype of that, though, right?
Yeah,
as well,
but I think that's born from, like, lack of confidence in your relationship.
Mm. And probably some unhappiness, too. I think there's yeah. probably some disappointment and unhappiness there. A lot of people, it's amazing what people put up with, too, right? Like, some people have these long ass marriages forever and ever, and they, you know,
they're awful.
And then they're in their 70s, and they're like, I fucking yeah. hated you all along.
Yeah.
But now I'm stuck with you. Now we're pensioners together. we're in this for the long run. And you just think, Jesus, I know it's like,
I know
you
exactly
have a family
those
and
people,
you have to
yeah.
stay together and stuff, but Christ almighty, at some point in your life, you have to just choose happiness, right? You can't just be miserable your whole life. And I mean, some people just want to be fucking miserable. It's true.
Yeah,
but
I mean, some people get so codependent that it's almost like, you ever seen Shawshank Redemption? You've seen that movie, right? It's on all the time. Yeah. Everybody's seen that movie. So yeah. in that movie, there's that guy who becomes institutionalized because he's been in there so long and he can't live on the outside world. And I think in a way, some people get into a relationship where the boundaries of their life are defined by that relationship. And especially when you're in a marriage or a long-term relationship, you tend to structure certain tasks and certain responsibilities between you. Just, you know, in some ways, especially traditionally, the woman would do all the housework and stuff like that. That's not the case anymore. It's still not even in general. Even when both people work, women still do more housework every week. That's like statistically. But in terms of like responsibilities, there are certain things around the house that I do. There are certain things around the house that Mrs. F does. And it's rare that she would do one of those and I would do the other, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
if you suddenly, and also she knows certain things about, you know, who, you know, when birthdays are, is a prime example, right?
Yeah.
If we
yeah.
ever split up, no fuck is getting a birthday card ever again. I have
no
fucking idea.
No, yeah, I'm
idea.
The same. I'm hopeless at
right.
that kind of
but,
stuff.
But I mean, there's other things like financial things or standing orders that we've got set up and all this kind of stuff, or things that yeah. are in her name, things that are in my name and stuff. So
I see.
We're,
that's
we're
just
completely
the birthday thing's just an example
yeah.
of how
because
your life would fall apart.
Exactly.
Because you don't even know what she knows.
Right, because at this point, because we're so codependent, what difference does it make if it's in my name or her name, or she's responsible or I'm? It doesn't matter, because we're one. We are joined as one.
So do you think that the institution of marriage kind of traps people into unhappiness?
No, I don't think it's... I think it's the opposite. I think marriage is the best thing that society has ever come up with. And I think the lack of it is actually a big concern. I'm not saying that I'm not a religious person.
So no, but
marriage is, it makes a huge difference to the quality of life that you're going to have and your children.
Oh, for sure, it's crazy. Yeah, and it's vital for children too. I think children have to have a mum and a dad, or two dads, or two.
They need two people. That's it.
To take care of them, because it is so much harder. They feel safer, and there's you don't. If you're being raised by one person, it's tough for one person to raise you. But also, there's no there's no compromise on values, right? You've just got this one person's values instilled in you, and that's it. And if you're lucky that person is good and somewhat stable or whatever, great, you're lucky. But sometimes it's good to have another person chime in and say, no, come on, you're being too hard on them, or don't do this, let's do this instead.
It teaches you a lot. Compromise.
Have some sort of plan. Yeah, compromise is a huge thing.
Also, you know, the funny thing is seeing your parents argue, not like screaming and throwing plates, but arguing and discussing something and having differences, I think is a really useful thing for kids as well, because they understand how to argue.
Yeah.
And they understand that people can have arguments and still be friends.
Of course.
So, I mean, my mum raised me and my sister when I was about 8 years old. So my sister would have been about 5.5, 6 years old. And she was a single parent. And I've seen exactly how hard it is. I know exactly how hard it is. So I don't think that promoting single parenthood is a good thing at all. I think it's really bad.
Really tough.
And if you want to look at the poverty rates and crime rates and drug use rates and alcoholism and everything, is worse outside of marriage, especially when you have kids. You can be single. Being single is fine. But if you have children, I think it's super, super important that you're in a relationship. And that's really what marriage is all about. Yeah. That's what it's for.
Yeah.
I think even worse than that sometimes is when you have small kids and you're a single parent, and then you meet a partner and you're bringing basically a stranger into the equation into raising your kids. Like, a lot of problems come out of that too.
Yeah.
Because you don't really know this person. And this person comes with probably baggage too. You know, if you've got a couple of kids, you're a single parent, you're in your 30s or whatever, and you've met somebody around the same age as you, chances are they've also come out of some sort of broken relationship, have some kids, have all this baggage and stuff as well. And I don't know, I think introducing new people into the mix further along down
difficult.
The line can be very,
can,
very hard.
But
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure it works
absolutely.
Too. I'm sure there's success stories.
There are YouTube compilations you can watch of kids giving adoption certificates to their sort of step-parents. So, you know, their father has left their mother or vice versa, and they're being raised essentially by someone else's, like, their surrogate dad or mum, and they're giving them adoption papers, like, for their birthday. And it's very heartwarming and everything, you know, very sweet. I think it shows that people, especially kids, really, really, really need parents around, especially both parents, I think, is so important.
I think this might just well be an opinion, though, right? Because I'm pretty sure I saw studies that showed that kids in single parent families were not necessarily any different to kids raised in dual
parent families. Well, kids are durable, but kids are very durable, and
I don't think they were shown to have any less happiness or less skills or less education or anything less. I think it's very much. I think that we can't make these opinions necessarily without them being backed up, because I think a lot of kids, I don't think we can cast judgment on these things without science behind them, right? And I don't know what
you're
science
right.
My
experience
either.
Is anecdotal, so it's not evidence. Yeah. But I mean, no, so I've definitely I think, read. I will find them
also,
if needed, but I've definitely read that single parenthood is really bad.
I'm a big counter-argumenter, right? And if I don't know the science, then I'll try not to.
Of course, no, you should question it, and you should say, let's find out.
In the same way, I think that, you know, we shouldn't necessarily force families together.
I don't know the science, so I'm going to counter you with even less science, if that makes sense.
I don't... Yeah, exactly.
You don't have the data, and I've got less. And
I've got even less than you do. Take that, bitch.
As a casual argument to what you guys have been saying, like, you know, I don't think that families should be forced to stay together for the sake of the kids if they're going to hate
Absolutely.
Each other. I'm sure
that's probably worse.
Yeah, unless again, there's some sort of compromise where it's like, you know what, we know we don't have a great relationship, but we're gonna stick with it until the kids are big enough, and then we'll part ways.
Just
when
become
they
swingers.
Are at an age when they understand or whatever. But yeah.
I think that's more common than we realize.
Let's keep up a front for the sake of the kids, and then, you know, once they're in high school or whatever, peace.
And honestly, like, the thing is that these days, what we're finding is that people are marrying later, they're having kids later, and as a result, when sort of divorce rates, in a sense, I think, have been dropping because I think people have been more educated and more sure
the right
with their decisions.
Yeah, they're finding the right person. Like, I think we used to get married absolutely.
And have kids a lot earlier. And, you know, I can't think how much I've changed since I was 21. You know, imagine most people got married when they were 21.
I was
25.
I was 23 when I got married. Back in the day, though, like, my grandma got married when she was like 18 and she already had like a kid on the way. And it, like, this is back in like the 1940s or whatever, but like it's definitely changed a lot.
Yeah.
I think
people are taking more time, I think, to have careers, especially women are having more time.
The average age is now 32.
I mean, but previously women didn't work, so it was different.
Men.
They didn't work as much, and they would give up their job when they got married. So all they had to do was get a job, get a flat somewhere, meet a guy, get married, and then have kids. Like, that was the archetypal family for a long time.
Yeah.
So nowadays you've got women going through university a lot more, getting jobs and careers, and then they have to meet the right kind of person who's going to be able to. I mean, basically, they need to be able to afford to have fucking childcare and kids.
Mostly the empowerment of women which has changed this, though.
It's absolutely
changed.
Because, you
know, women now want to get a career and a job, and they don't want to spend this time giving it up to.
But is that empowerment, or is that just equality with men? Because that's what men have had forever.
Yeah, I feel like I feel like it's great on the one hand, and then on the other hand, I just think, Jesus, do you really know what you're getting yourselves into? Like, you really want to fucking toil away?
You could have stayed at home.
Stinks. It sucks. Fuck me.
Well, yeah. I mean, obviously, women got what they wanted, but
you didn't know what
you
wanted. You
wished for it. Welcome to work. Yeah. It fucking sucks.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I read an interesting thing about paternity leave. Did either of you guys get paternity leave at all?
I didn't have a job.
I was pretty lucky, yeah. My place is really good with paternity leave. They gave me tons of time off. And then even after the baby was born, a couple of days I had to just phone in sick because my wife was just like fucking dead from the massive culture shock and just the process of giving birth and stuff. So they were super generous. They gave me lots of paternity time, and on top of that, just a lot of random sick days and days to just, you know, adjust and get on top of things and stuff. It was pretty good.
Do you think that was healthy for you to have when you came back to work and things? Did it help you, like, be a better employee and stuff? Was it a good thing? No.
Not at all. No. It's just necessary.
It's just good for you.
I just had to be there to help.
Necessary.
There was certain things that just needed to be done and certain situations that had to be resolved and stuff. And it was just nice to have the flexibility to do that. But I was fucking dead when I went back to work, and I've been dead ever since for the past like 6 years. So
I think I was working, but I quit. I mean, my job finished very quickly after the baby was born. Like, I was like, I worked for a few more months and then I was done and just looked after the kids ever since. I know, not just, you know, I do the fucking Triforce podcast and
that's a full-time job itself,
baby.
So, yeah.
7,000 hours
Holy
of Dota,
shit.
That's taken you. That's a,
I looked at your Dota buff the other day.
Oh, yeah.
And just seeing your games played, and there's very few days when you've not played Dota.
I've played
in the
Dota
last,
pretty much every
like,
day for 5 years.
Years.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
5 years.
Years.
5 years. It's crazy.
Jesus Christ. It's pretty scary.
Actually,
like, there were a couple of days
now.
On there.
Yeah.
And I was looking at it, I was like, what happened on these days? And it was like 3 days where you played like 18 games, 19 games, and 18 games of Dota. And I was like, how long is the average game? Like 45 minutes to an hour, maybe? And you played like 18 fucking games?
Yeah.
I was like, Mrs. Flax must have been away that weekend or something.
I mean, this weekend she was away. So the weekend just gone. She took the kids down to Bournemouth for the weekend to see her parents. And I was like,
pizza boxes all over the place.
No, I was really good, right? I actually went out to the shop, like I planned it all out. Like it's the most planning I've ever put into anything in months. I was like, she's away? So I went to the shop on Friday and I bought a load of supplies and I bought meals and stuff, and they were all, you know, not I didn't just buy sloppy stuff, bought a hell of a lot of booze. So, you know, that counteracted all the good stuff.
And then you played six
and
games of Dota.
Literally just sat and played Dota for forever.
And then you played six games of Dota on Saturday and six games on Sunday.
And we did Hearts of Iron. We did Hearts of Iron on Saturday night for 7.5 hours. We did
Lewis,
a multiplayer game.
Hey, Lewis, do you have a website where you can tell what I did this weekend? Or
well, no, but this, it's exactly, called, isn't this Pornhub, a wonderful resource? Like, your wife knows that you're not cheating because she's like, all right, well, you've been playing Dota every day for 8 hours a day.
Yeah, you know
for
what?
The last five
yeah, there's that.
Years.
There's that too. But I mean, the thing is, a lot of people are like, all you do is sit around and play Dota, but it's such a cheap hobby, isn't it? It doesn't
it's
cost
a free,
anything.
It's free to
you're
play,
not out,
baby. It's
you're
free
not
to
out
play.
Drinking. You're yeah. not out, you know, spending a ton of money here, there, and everywhere, taking your number one bae to the movies and then for a hot meal afterwards and then a couple of drinky poos
and
stuff.
Juicy pussy and just pussy like destroying. It.
Shoving yeah. your gigantic ramrod into her love hole and stuff. Yeah. You're not doing any of that shit. You're just sitting there playing a game for free. It's so cheap. It's such a good hobby. It's such a good hobby to have. Especially
you know what,
if you're
though? My eldest daughter is just as bad as me when it comes to games in terms of just wanting to play them all the time. Like, that's all she wants to do. She is. We got her a Nintendo Switch for her birthday, so I'm kind of enabling this addiction because I'm there with her. You know what I mean? I've always played games. I'm sure you guys are the same. I've always played games.
My son is the exact same. We have the exact same situation at our house.
But, and her mentality is exactly the same as mine, is that she'll play a multiplayer game, doesn't really mind if she wins or loses. She tries to win, but it's not like this devastating, crushing, oh my God, I'm so frustrated. Like, my mate used to bite his Xbox controller. Like that in fury, or his Super Nintendo controller had teeth marks all over it from where he was bitten in frustration.
I took a Super Nintendo controller one time. I was playing Super Metroid, and you know the like the sticky wall jump, where you jump up on a wall,
yeah,
and you
gotta
stick
jump
to
wall
it,
to wall,
and then you have
to
jump wall to wall. Yeah. I'd been playing it for a while. My hands were very clammy and sweaty, so doing the sticky wall jump was proving to be quite difficult. And man, I got so fucking frustrated. I took the Nintendo controller by the cord, spun it around really quick, like on a short cord, spun it around really quick, and then like whacked it on the ground, and it smashed open and smashed everywhere.
Oh no.
Yeah, it was pretty brutal. I had to like try to screw it back together, and then it didn't quite work again, so... And back then, it wasn't like, oh, I'll just go on Amazon and I'll get one delivered tomorrow.
Another
one like,
tomorrow.
I had to wait like a week before I could get a new controller and stuff. It was terrible.
Holy fuck. Sorry, I just got lost in Dota Buff then. I was just looking at your stats, period.
I had a 9 win streak. I had a 9
Dota.
Fucking win streak, and then it got
Jeez.
Busted.
Oh my God.
Glorious.
So I'm I don't know if I'm allowed to say anything about this, but I suppose I can say that for some reason I've been really interested in Dota again. And I don't know, it's like when I played Hearthstone, I got really into World of Warcraft. You know, it's one of those things where it just sort of brings you back into the fray of that world. And I'm just thinking about Dota, and I might have to start playing it again.
No.
It's weird. Uh-oh. It's like. It's happening.
Uh-oh.
Like,
but I'm a winning player now.
I got a little taste
now,
of it
Lewis.
In my veins.
Yeah, that's
and now
I,
I'm like,
I need to warn you, Lewis. If you think you're going to be playing with Flax, you better bring your A game because he doesn't suffer fools.
I don't have
like,
an A game anymore.
He's
then you're out
at best.
Yeah, Flax got mad at me for being bad at Dota and said he wouldn't play with me anymore.
What? You said on stream that you can't have two Tards or something like that. Like. I saw that someone sent me the clip of you saying, look, I'm bad and Flax is bad.
I'm bitter because I was rejected, so I was lashing out.
I saw that. So there's this Twitch clip of you saying, if you have one bad on a team, it's okay. But if there's two bads on a team, the other team can't carry those people.
Yeah. I mean, I've been playing actually with
and
my
that's
viewers.
That's why you don't play with people.
Actually, I've been playing a lot with viewers, especially in the morning, because I've got like a regular crew that I play with in the evening, like Munt and Cine and Plague and guys like that.
Yeah.
And in the morning, I mix it up and I play with pretty much anybody. And mainly because most of my mates are at, you know, the guys that I normally play with are at work or at university or whatever. But there always seem to be these strange people that are around at 10 a.m. on a weekday morning or 9 a.m. on a Monday. They'll be like, I can easily get four guys that just want to play Dota. So, but some of them are like so bad. It's actually made me miss you guys.
Like worse than me?
Oh, way worse.
Oh, man.
Dude, I played with a guy.
I feel bad for you.
He had less than 10 games of Dota, okay? Let me tell you something. When we got him in the stack, it was a guaranteed win because he was really trying and he's actually improved. Like, you can see him getting better while he's playing. And he only plays Witch Doctor. It's the only hero I've ever seen him play.
Right.
He's called Yi-Man. He just plays this hero and he really tries and he's a trier and he supports properly and he learns and he listens and everything. I was like, this is the dream, because he drags this right down to a lower bracket. So yes, he's an anchor. He's never going to win the game for you, but it makes the games a lot easier by having him. Do you know what I mean? Like, he puts you in a lower skill bracket game. And it says at the beginning, a little disclaimer pops up that says, please remember to be patient and understanding with newer players. That's what Dota 2 says to you now when Yi-Man and guys like that are in the game, which I think is fantastic. So I don't mind playing with bad players. The problem I have with playing with you guys, you two in particular, okay,
yeah,
is you don't give a shit.
No.
You literally couldn't care less. You don't listen to anything anyone says. You don't really want to win. You just go off and do your own thing. And every time, I remember when I was playing with Sips, so, like, he walks into just blind uphill. There's a hero there that kills him. He's like, oh, fuck me. Like, he can't. Oh, this game is so bullshit. Oh, he could just kill me. Because Dota is not a fair game. And sometimes your hero will just die to this hero. That's it. This hero kills your hero. And there's nothing you can do about it other than not be in that place. Or you have to be already winning the game and be more farmed than them. And I think most games try to keep it even. If you look at Counter-Strike, if I have a pistol, I can kill a guy with an AWP, right? It's just that's the way the game goes. You can just outplay someone. Dota is not like that. Dota is very different. Your hero sometimes just kills the other guy and there's nothing. You've just got him. And I think for a lot of people, and I think for you, Sips especially, that's very frustrating.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
Because
you play
a lot of games that are a lot fairer, and you play a lot of single player games.
I think that's the same. Right? I think that it's about fairness. I think the thing about Dota is it's incredibly complex, right? Like, when I'm playing a miniatures game, right, and there's a dice, and you hit on fives, you know that's a 1 in 3 chance of you hitting, right? So you're thinking, okay, 5 fire, 10 shots, 3 and a third of them are going to hit. So, you know, on average, you know, that's a 5 to wound, so 1/3's going to. So I'm going to do 1 wound on average, okay? And then he's got an armor save. So I could probably do a wound if I shoot him with these 10 guys. So you roll your 10, that's your decision made, and you can. It's kind of an intelligent thing, whereas with Dota, it's all so quick and so fast, and the levels are 1 to 25, and you don't know what items they have, you don't know where they put their skill points, and you're not quite sure how much damage these abilities necessarily of every 100 of heroes do. And so you don't necessarily know if you're going to go up on a 1v1 with someone, am I going to kill this guy? And sometimes, a lot of times, you'll blink in, you'll start hitting this guy, and you'll realize, oh, fuck, I completely misjudged this. Yeah. There's no way I'm going to be able to kill this guy. And you're like, do I hope that someone will turn up and save me? Do I, like, back out? And like then, and it's added to the mix by the fact that there could have been another fucking invisible guy, like, just around the corner, or he could have support just out
of
the fog.
Yeah, all the rest of it, yeah.
And you have to try and weigh all these things up, and then... But and as a result, it's kind of this thing that just kind of, it becomes this sort of a feeling that you just get for the game, right? You just get, rather than it being like a concrete decision backed up by any kind of numbers, by any kind of sensibility, by something you could be trained in and learned, like if you went through all the damage tables and stuff and you kind of learn, I mean, sure, you can, in a tabletop game, you kind of know roughly how good units are against units and you'll osmose that stuff in, but in a sense, like, we're used to playing XCOM and things like this, where like, yeah, I'm happy taking an 80% shot, yeah, I'm happy I'm taking a risk on this one, whereas with Dota it's like I'm never sure, and I really kind of, that frustrates me in a sense, because I'm, and the only way you really get it is through doing it. Like the guy who plays Witch Doctor, he knows that if he can play it enough games, like with Hearthstone as well,
you just
like,
develop a sense for timing and stuff.
I think that's the way, I mean, the way I ended up getting Legend and the way they recommend playing these games is you just play the same fucking deck, because what you do is you learn all the fucking scenarios. And when I got Legend, it was because I knew every single thing that could happen.
I was the same. You know your matchups, you know which one's your favorite in, you know what's coming, you know what to...
Like 1 in 10 games
mulliganing as well is so important, and knowing what to mulligan against, you know, sort of predicting what deck somebody's running and mulliganing correctly
and
against them.
It's nice to be able to do that and think, okay, I've achieved that. But with Dota, there's so many factors, there's so many things, there's so many different things. And I feel like the other thing about Dota is I'm always a little bit scared to become good with one hero, because then I've put my MMR up too high with that, and then I'm no good with anything else. And it's like, okay, I can only ever play this one hero. And that's not how I like to play Dota. I like to play with random heroes every time. Like, I like to play Hearthstone, but that when I play that, I never leave rank 20. If I, because I never leave rank 20 at Hearthstone if I'm playing random decks. I never leave fucking, you know, shit tier MMR with Dota because I want to play a different hero every time, and I'm never willing to learn. And by the time I've learned a bit on every single hero, I've forgotten what I've learned, I think.
I mean, you know, the other thing is that Dota is not a game that anybody fully understands. Like, a patch will come. I mean, there's a patch tonight, right? There'll be a patch tonight that changes the game again. And even the guys who spent, the pro players, the very top pro players, have an understanding of the game that varies between team and person. So Captain A, Captain B, Captain C will all have a different appreciation of what they think works and what doesn't. And how, and they're like, you'll hear them talk. There'll be a team that's doing great. And they'll say, oh, yeah, we could beat them. All you have to do is X, Y, Z. And they feel that they have a counter. The other teams don't have that. If this was a game where you could have perfect understanding, there would be a mathematical guaranteed way to win, like there is in a lot of games, like say poker. There is an optimal way to play poker, right?
Absolutely.
So, and there is an optimal way to play a lot of games. But Dota doesn't really have that because there's too much going on.
There
is an optimal way of playing every game. And if you're wondering where to find out more information on how to play games optimally, look no further than Twitch chat, because everybody there is an expert at the game. Okay,
right, so Sips, you stream a lot.
I've never played this game before, but I think if you do X, Y, and Z, you surefire win.
You stream a lot, right? I stream a lot. I try as little as possible to read chat, and people say to me, "Does Pyrrhon interact with his viewers? Like, does he ever read chat?" Because I hardly ever read it, but I seem to have a sixth sense for when someone is shit talking me or saying something mean. Normally, I'll take it completely out of context, but I'll happen to look at chat when someone has said, "Oh, fuck off," or "This guy's such a tool," and I'll be banning that person, and then realizing my mistake and unbanning that person. But I hardly ever try to look to Twitch chat for advice.
This brings back the conversation about chat emotes, though, too, because sometimes people say something, and if there's a kappa at the end of it, you know they're just being sarcastic, right? But without it, you're like, "Holy fuck, this fucking guy! I'm gonna ban him!" He's dissing me on the net. You know?
I can't stand
He called me a pussy on the net.
Like,
no.
The worst thing for me is that now that I've played with a lot of the guys in my chat that like talk a lot, I've played with them. I know they're terrible. And they're lolling and saying, "Oh, you should do this, you should do that." And I'm like,
ruffling.
I'm like, how fucking dare you, dude? You suck. And like, I was playing the other day, I was playing Counter-Strike. Yeah, seriously. I was playing Counter-Strike last night, and this guy's in chat telling me all this stuff I should be doing. "You're wasting too many nades, you're doing this, you're doing that." I was like, "Can you shut the fuck up? I'm just playing CSGO with my mates." And he was like, "Well, what's wrong with some advice?" And I said, "All right, imagine this. You've got your car out on the driveway, you've got the hood open, you're fixing something, you're doing your best job." I mean, this was, people don't fix their cars in the driveway anymore, but they certainly could in the past. You're out there fixing your car, some guy's walking down the road and just stops and starts telling you what you're doing wrong. Now, you don't know if this guy's a fucking mechanic.
No.
Maybe you're mowing the lawn, right? And he's like, "Oh, no, you don't want to be going horizontal across that fucking lawn, mate. You want to be fucking doing it vertical."
Right.
You want to be doing...
Yeah, it's always like a Londoner that has to come in, even if you're nowhere near London. So,
you could be in Texas.
What are you doing,
mate? Oh, no,
mate,
you're doing that all wrong. You want to go vertical, Stripes. Vertical, not horizontal. What are you doing, you mud?
Where in the middle of the Congo? Where did you come from?
You don't want to go that close to the verge, mate.
Oh,
it's
no,
going to fucking...
Terry,
you're
look
gonna,
at this cat his lawn like a cat. So to me, that's what Twitch chat is kind of like. People think they stop by and we're just all friends, but I don't fucking know you.
There's a guy in my Twitch chat called Backseat Gamer, and every once in a while he chimes in and he's very funny. Like, I was playing Kerbal Space Program, and he donated, and he's like, "Sips, I've just taken a lunch break from my very busy job at my career at NASA doing astronomy and particle physics and stuff, just to tell you that you are fucking stupid. You suck at this game, and you should play it the way that I want you to play it." It's so funny. It gets me every time.
I think, like, we played Space Hulk yesterday on Battle Boys, which is one of the streams where we're sort of trying to play miniature games and board games.
What a name.
It's a great, great stream. Check it out. And Tom, we were playing Space Hulk, and obviously this is a game that Tom and Ben have played, and I played back in the day, but obviously nowhere near as much as they did. And it felt like Tom was going into the game with basically perfect information. Right? He kind of knew the game so well that, because I was going down the right-hand side with my Terminator, he was going the left-hand side, and he was doing stuff that was crazy, right? He was like, oh, yeah, if I do this guy, I can, like, spin him round, shoot, spin and shoot, turn and, like, cover. And I was, like, just chomping my Marines down like a 10-year-old, you know, playing Warhammer for the first time. And Tom was, like, just going in there like some sort of masterclass. And I think that he'd played that game enough that he knew
his limits
inside and out. And
he knew his boundaries.
At that point, though, it almost became a game of chance, right, for him, because he knew what all of the situations were and he knew how to play as good as he could, and it just was bad luck that did him in. Like, if you rolled a dice and it didn't hit, then he lost the game. You know, it didn't feel like it was a game anymore in that sense, right? It felt like a coin flip because he knew the game so well that it obviously, like, his decisions were all locked in a sense, right? Whereas with something much more complicated, like poker or Dota, I think that the osmosis of the world that's around you is still, like, key. Like, you just have to immerse yourself, like, so much in the game and play so much of the game that you're just, you know, at another level.
You know what I like? I like playing games with Tom because he's a very funny guy, but he does also understand games. Like, he's not like some mega tryhard, but he definitely knows how to play. You know what I mean? Like, when you play games with Tom, Ben is the same. And they're both very understanding with people who are shit at games. I'm shit at games. So, like, when I come up there and we play a board game or something like that, and Ben or Tom is in charge of it, they're very, very good at dealing with me not knowing what the fuck I'm doing. I like that. I need
They're
that.
Also very much, I think, like, they get tempered by people like Alex, right, who is this guy we play with, who is... His sort of attitude towards games is that he doesn't give a fuck about winning.
Right.
Okay. It's in a weird way. Like, some people don't give a fuck about winning for different reasons. Like, Shin just wants to troll. He wants to make a laugh.
Right.
He wants to kind of... And Sips, too, to some extent, like, has always been this guy who doesn't really care about winning. He just wants to kind of make weird shit happen.
Right. It's almost like trying to get the game to tell a story.
Yeah.
It's like, let's see what story we can get from this game, because that is more interesting and funnier. Definitely, and more memorable. If you have a really weird game, like if we played Civ and all kinds of weird stuff happened, we'd remember that much more than just a straightforward everybody playing to win.
Like every Hearts of Iron game we've ever played. This is
but
a weird one.
I don't
one.
Think any of us are necessarily coming at it with the angle of I want to make this like fun for other people, or I want to make this fun to watch. Like, I think a lot of people still come at it with the angle of I want to make it fun for myself,
right,
and
right.
The way that I want to make it fun for myself is not to win.
Yeah.
It's to just like get immersed in the world, or make up stupid stories, or come up with stupid anecdotes that enhance the storytelling of that world. Which is why I think we've seen this rise of D&D and that type of thing, because it lets those creative people who don't necessarily want to win, because with D&D, you win, but you kind of know you're going to win because it's kind of fixed that you're going to win.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Any good GM is not going to let your characters die. Whereas, you know, in Space Hulk, you've got your favorite fucking Space Marine, bam, he's dead.
Yeah.
But, you know, fuck you.
I don't necessarily want to lose, but I like creating a shitstorm if I can. You know, I like creating a situation that seems almost impossible to get out of, because it does make for a good story, but it just makes for a fun time playing the game too. You know,
I think you're a different kind of troll to Shin, definitely. Like
there's plenty of times in XCOM where I'd taken a move that was, you know, catastrophic, but then just scraped my way out of it, sort of thing. And
I can see that. Like, you'd either taken an ability that was just mathematically worse, or you'd done a move that was mathematically stupid or wrong deliberately,
and at some point it fits into the narrative, sort of thing. And
yeah,
I
think
like
that's
those
about
moments.
That's about karma, though, too, right? It's about sometimes you. So this is when you're playing a game, you have to be like, I'm just doing this. I know it's wrong, but I'm just doing this. And I think that some people are different character types, and they will never take those wrong decisions in a sense.
I like the idea of discovering something about a game that, and you know that this game is being played by millions of people, and everybody's probably come across it, or at least like a good portion of the people playing the game have come across it. But I like to sometimes think like I've done this and nobody really does this and it's paid off and I've discovered some new quirk to the game or something, even though I never do. Like it always just ends in some sort of failure or whatever, but I like the idea.
Sometimes all you need to do is to see the idea blossom and then you extrapolate forwards. Like in a sense, like one of the things I've been trying to push in storytelling is like, you know, if you set something up, the audience sees it to its conclusion, right? So if you say, you know, if you get a guy drawing a gun on someone, he says, I'm going to kill you. It already in your mind, you've seen that guy getting killed. Yeah. And so you kind of, in a story, for me, like, you can't kill him at that point, right? You've almost, like, for me, because it's just not, it's like an inevitable, you know, unless it's unbelievable. That's a bad example. But so often, like, you know, the best twists come when everything you think is leading towards this end where you're like, okay, I see where this is going. I've predicted it. Aren't I smart? You know, I figured out who it is, you know, and then bam, it's not.
Yeah. I played a game of CK2 one time and I was Sardinia and I was quite happy to just own all of Sardinia. I conquered it. I held on to it. And I was just, the whole game, I was just like, yeah, we're just going to keep Sardinia. We're going to see what happens around the rest of the world, but we're just going to hold on to Sardinia.
Make Sardinia this great again.
This is going to be this is going to be our stronghold sort of thing. We'll build it up and stuff. And I wasn't too worried about what was going to happen the rest of the game. I just wanted to hang on to Sardinia. And then over the course of the rest of the game, I end up inheriting Burgundy. So I have to run all of Burgundy as well. And then Sardinia gets invaded, so I had to take it back. And it just, when you set out with like a very small goal, just the rest of the game can open up sometimes and, you know, take you to places you never thought you were going to go in that playthrough of the game. And I just think that that's exciting and it's a fun way of doing things. Like I usually have small, dumb goals that I like to achieve. And then that usually just leads on to like a bigger sort of like, you know, meta goal.
It's nice to play games that allow that.
That's true too. Yeah.
That's all we got time for because we better go. There's no one next week because me and Sips are away in Seattle.
Yes.
Have a great time, lads.
Yeah, we did.
Baby.
We don't know what we can talk about with regards to that, but we'll let you know when we get back and hopefully give you a little run now.
Seattle is great. You guys will love it. Get some chowder. Go down to Pike's Place. Don't go to the big place on the board.
Pike's Place is really good.
It's okay.
Recommended Pike's Place.
The closer you get to the water, the worse the restaurants get. But if there's one place, I can't remember what it's called, I can find the name out of it for you, that does bread bowl soup. So it's like a bowl made out of bread. It's like a giant.
You just eat the bowl when you're done the soup.
That is the best chowder I've ever had. And I say that as apologies to New Englanders everywhere, but that is the best chowder. The chowder! Chowder!
Chowder!
Well, there you go. The chowder! Thank you. This podcast is sponsored by Chowder.com.
And The Simpsons as well. Make sure you watch brand new episodes on fox.com/simpsons.html.
To get your free bowl of chowder delivered hot steaming to your door.
Yeah.
I would accept that sponsorship.
Hot woman.
We'll even dump it in your pussy. Free of charge.
That's good for your pussy.
Just pour it in there. All right.
All right.
See you later,
everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye.